It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah! Oh, are we afraid? I mean, if you look at all the data, you should be. But what if you got a much bigger picture? You know what they had to do. You know how much money they had to spend. Tens of trillions of dollars over generations. I mean, the entire apparatus of taking your money was more than just social and economic engineering. It was what they needed to be able to socially and economically engineer you. You know, and they do it in such a way to socially and economically engineer you, and then they take your money and do it some more. You know, yeah, we got on the line. David, New Mexico. I got you there, David?
Hello there, Ernie.
Is this David McElroy?
Sure enough.
Oh, he was one of the guys who did the holding action on the Arizona Breakfast Club, kept it going from the time that, you know, Harry was, you know, starting to get older and sicker and winding down to the time
Harry
that...
passed away at 95 years old, and he retired at 90, and he decided 90 was a good time to lay it down. And but he served long and hard, and he did a great job, and we owe him a great debt. We stand on the shoulders of those who came before us.
Yeah, I'm. Are you been listening to the story? I hadn't even really got hard into it yet. I'm kind of setting the groundwork. But, you know, go ahead and tell the people what you knew of Harry's history.
Well, Harry, as you said, had come up in the Patriot movement of World War II. He worked among the laboring people, the unions in Chicago. And as you said, he was encouraging people to buy war bonds and to oppose the Nazi menace and so forth, and was aware of those things. And he worked with We the People for a great many years, hosted some fantastic banquets. The Breakfast Club was actually on television in its early years on Channel 22 when it was a Christian station. And he's really left a great legacy, and I still have some of his many newsletters and things. I just also wanted to mention, though, that between Harry's laying it down and you're taking it up, there were two other presidents, Eugene Kernan and Pastor Wesley Darby, and I administered the club under their presidencies. During that time, as you said, in the later years, Harry started entertaining libertarian speakers such as yourself and Barry Hess, and I encourage more of that. And as you said, the Republican people are starting to wake up that their party has moved into the socialist camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I tell people now is if they look closely and they look at the principles and the dynamics, Democrats are international socialists, or what we would call communists, whereas the Republicans, or the neocons, are national socialists, or what we would call fascists. And that's why we now have the corporatist state, as our friend Ron Paul said, Obama is a corporatist.
Yeah, no, definitions are good. This is when Harry started, what really started him pulling back when his wife died. And,
yeah.
And I can't remember her name. Marilyn, what was her name?
Oh, golly molly. Yeah. I have to look it up. I know it. I just can't spit it out. I'm getting old myself, you know.
Yeah. Well, what happened was as he was starting to pull back, because he was, you know, getting up there, but he still had a lot of knowledge. A lot of people wanted to keep the traditions going, and I've been approached over the years, and so I'm like, You know, it's going to be a lot different with me than it is Harry, and I don't want to do.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. And I was cut off unawares when the time went out. I wanted to finish my thought. I still got you there, David?
Yeah, I'm here.
I encourage you guys to call in. You know, 800-313-9443. 313-9443. We make a song. What happened was, and you can fill in the blanks here on this, Harry had an enormous following that aged over the decades to where, I mean, literally they just started dying off. And you would have fascinating people that had fascinating stories. But the times, they were a-changing. And there was a desire for, you know, me and others, you know, had been offered this to do it and so on. But I couldn't do it exactly the same way. I mean, I give you an example. One thing is, I don't mind blessing the food. You know, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I don't mind people wanting to vote Republican or whatever the heck they want or something. But there are certain things I wasn't going to. In 1996, I think it was, around in there, they asked and I accepted to be on the board of directors. Well, Bob Dole was the Antichrist right up until he got the Republican nomination. And once that happened, they're making all kind of excuses for him and everything. I'm going, I'm out of here. This is just, you know, man, this makes your brain, you know, hurt. I can't help you with this. It's not a Republican thing. It's a freedom thing. So what happened was, after Harry, you know, I wanted to keep some of the traditions, but one of the things was we weren't going to do this partisan thing. We're just going to do the truth. If it happened to be, you know, I'm libertarian, they can just get used to it. But the other thing was something like the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, and I just had a problem with that. I wouldn't, as time went on and I understood where it really came from and what it meant and the brainwashing it did and so on, there was this nationalistic kind of patriotic thing that was going on with Harry that had been going on for generations. And then to the next one, are we going to continue in the new generation, the new people, the average age of the Breakfast Club now, we're back up to, you know, anywhere from 50 to 100 and whatever people again. But the thing is that the average age has probably dropped 30, 40 years. So I'm going, am I going to instill in them the same, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. You know, it's just, I had a problem with that. So it wasn't until I said, look, if I take this over, now that we're, you know, Harry had actually passed away. We had Gene Kernan had done, you know, I got an email from Gene not too long ago. I think he posted something on Freedom's Phoenix like 2 weeks ago. So that was good to hear that he's around. And then Pastor Darby was the pastor. He always sat up at the head table. And he had his own church here that had kind of a patriot church. You know, Dave, yeah, you went to his church, right?
Oh, I was Pastor Darby's right-hand man for about 6 years, so.
So this was, it still was, you know, God, Republican Party, anti-communist kind of, you know, and we're looking for the truth as long as it doesn't embarrass our Republican congressional friends. And I that just wasn't me. As time went on, it started to get to where it was very clear what was happening. It finally, I'm going, okay, as it was starting, you know, David, you were moving to New Mexico. They weren't going to have you to keep that done or thing. So Frank Ritchie, longtime attendee, a lot of the same guys are still going. He kind of took it over the administrative part of it. And then I went ahead and said, okay, we'll reconstitute the Arizona Breakfast Club. We'll keep doing it. The same people doing it, but we're going to do it a little bit different. The only thing we'll still sing and we'll whatever, but we're not going to turn a blind eye to the Republican Party. We're not going to turn a blind eye to the government. We're not going to just follow in, and it's just going to be a little bit different. We're going to seek the truth, which is what Harry, I felt, was doing. He really exposed so many things to me that I would never have known. And I talked to Harry about this, and this is what I wanted to talk about today, was the conversations between he and I and where he came from. And it was from my questioning this kind of stuff that he would open up to me and tell me his history. Is there something else you wanted to say, Dave, before I went into that?
Well, I certainly got a great education in the Arizona Breakfast Club. Those years I spent there were probably the most educational years in my entire life. I got to meet a great many interesting people in many different walks of life who had interesting things to share, a great many different activists and officials, and it was a wonderful experience. That's where I became educated about Ron Paul and helped put together one of his meetings there in Phoenix that you catered when you were still running that restaurant there.
But, that's right. I forgot all about that. Yeah, that was – what year was that? That was
like 2002, I believe. But we had 400 people there, and we couldn't get any more people in. It was loaded.
That's right. I forgot all about that. The Arizona Breakfast Club had a meeting at an auditorium in one of the civic auditoriums in Scottsdale, and we had just started doing the Freedom Summit. And I think it was before we had Dr. Paul come to our first one, and we had started talking to him at this particular event, and we hosted the breakfast. I mean, we had done a bunch of stuff and had it. It was a nice event. And, 400 or 500 people. I mean, filled it up. And it was Dr. Paul doing his Dr. Paul thing. And that's why, Mark and I, my partner in the Freedom Summit, we were so enthusiastic about really getting, the Breakfast Club, right on. they're getting it, man. We're getting in Dr. Paul. We're doing it. And that's when the transition kind of started.
That's where we passed out the Arizona Project book. When we cleaned out things for Harry, we found several cases of undistributed books, the Arizona Project. So we were distributing those at that meeting, and that's where you got your copy, I think.
Yeah, and I PDF'd it and put it up on the bad corruption stuff in the history of Arizona. I mean, to include Barry Goldwater, So, there was a lot of bad stuff. Hey, thanks for calling in, David. It was good to talk to you, man.
Well, have a great day, Ernie.
Yeah, you too. So we fast forward and we kind of have this overlapping period to where I couldn't in good conscience do overlap two things. One, I couldn't change the Breakfast Club to the way that I thought the new direction it should be. It was not a big, giant new direction, but it wasn't going to be the same flavor. A lot of people were going to not like it. And I go, fine, then somebody else do it, because I'm not going to do it this way. You have to understand that if you guys want to participate, it's going to be a little bit different. We're going to focus on other stuff. And not really other stuff, just a different perspective. We're not going to lie to ourselves. We're not going to have somebody come up and say something. Then the next week we're 180 degrees. We got some politician up there we're clapping for. I mean, it's not going to be like that. Well, what happened, it was because the Republican Party really just kept going more and more fascist. It left Harry. It left the Breakfast Club. And there was really no – and attendance started going down. Plus, the internet had a lot to do with that, because the internet, a lot of people were able to just get the information straight without even having to get up at 7:30 in the morning. So what we did is finally it gets Harry passed away. We'd go and see him at his nursing home there a little bit. And in 95, he passed away. And then it kind of opened it up. Okay, here we go. Well, his history was fascinating. He went around promoting nationalism, America, MK, and anti-communist. I went to him early in the 90s, and after I had started seeing and meeting and associating with some libertarians and got all my questions answered. Because when you ask even Harry, you just got to kind of turn a blind eye to that. Well, that's politics, Well, that's, the same old stuff you always hear. You just got to, bite your lip and vote for that kind of thing. And I'm just, nah, that wasn't me. Well, I found these libertarians. And I'm like, Harry, wow, man, these libertarian things, man, they got it going on. Did you know about it? He goes, I know. I don't have nothing to do with it. I know. Yeah, I know. And he definitely, man, he had an opinion. He knew. I go, all right, well, maybe he just doesn't, want, I'm not going to, you don't fight with, 80, 90-year-old people. I mean, they got it. They're done. So That's why with Dr. Paul and I, when we do different stuff, I never even mention anything he should do. I mean, I'm going to tell him, you know, what to say or do or shouldn't. What? Heck no. We didn't even have those conversations. You just do what you're going to do. You do what you're going to do. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And we're good, and we'll overlap. And that's how we get along. What happened was in the 50s, there was an effort by the United Nations to insert a bunch of stuff and, you know, the graphics of the flag, and you get your little badge and so on if you do something UNICEF and United Nations or whatever for the Girl Scout manual. The Girl Scout manual included a bunch of that. And in fact, the Boy Scout manual does too, or did. But this is started with the Girl Scout manual. They were trying to infiltrate into our culture. And Harry and Robert Lefebvre, a famous libertarian from back in the day, they coordinated together on this thing to defeat that. That's where he knew libertarians back in the 50s. So what was his problem with them? We'll talk about it when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
And then that song goes on, talk about, I don't want your wars no more. I don't, you know, American Woman, I always think of Canada when I hear this song. As you listen to the whole lyrics, it's like, you know, this America, stay away. You know, I don't need your wars no more. I'm done. And I'm like, wow, man, a lot of the communication between the youth and so on and back in the day was music. And a lot of this stuff, you know, people don't even remember or know why they said what they were saying, because they saw America as part of the problem. And this was instilled, but I had to look this up. I hear it a lot, and it's called cognitive dissonance. And a lot of people will use that a lot. Well, they got cognitive. I didn't even know what they meant. So I looked it up. Wikipedia kind of describes it. Basically this. Somebody walks around with two competing belief systems in their head. You know, I'll give you an example. America, always good, war bad. Republican Party, better than Democrat, but they tax and spend still and do, but I read my lips, no new taxes, but I vote for Bush. I mean, you see my point? I mean, it's just, it makes you crazy. And I chose not to go down that. No, I'm looking for a purist kind of thing. Well, this libertarian philosophy, now, of course, a lot of libertarians, they got their own problems. But, you know, but the libertarian philosophy, you know, predated any politics and so on. That had it going on. I'm good with that. I'm thou shalt not aggress. I can live with that one. So Harry, working with Robert Lefebvre, they were very, very active and very effective at getting this to the public in a time before internet and so on. I mean, how do you do it? I mean, he did a lot of pamphleting. They had different groups set up. They had their structure from World War II and all that kind of, they had the We the People thing, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people get this information, the newsletters that they were putting out and so on. You do it kind of like the John Birch Society kind of thing. You know, you got your little chapters and so on. But you go ahead and you take this information and you put it out and boom, everybody knew something or knew what to ask about something. Well, in this book, 1967, some of my research, I came across in chapter 10 is they're talking about the educators. All right. Now, they're seeing it from a left perspective. To them, the libertarians and the constitutionalist and the right, the conservatives, to them, they're all the same thing. You know, they don't see a difference. What Harry did, his problem he had with libertarians was they take good conservatives and turn them against the United States government because they turn them against all coercive governments. His thing was they go to this thing called the Freedom School. It was founded in 1956. And what it was in Colorado. And the Freedom School and Rampart College up there, Harding College, National Education Program, you know, these idea organizations were, you know, from created out of the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE. This was, you know, we have Lawrence Reed is the president now, the chairman of the board or whatever for FEE now. And I met him in Michigan a month or so ago. And he's going to be one of the speakers or keynote at the Freedom Summit this year in December. And his experience was he was really against communism. I mean, as a young man in his, you know, 12, 13, 14, because he saw the, how was it, the Sound of Music, you know, the Hills Are Alive with the Sound of Music with Julie Andrews. And it, for the first time, he sees in Technicolor this Nazi oppression of people that were just this nice, you know, von Trapp family just want to be left alone. And they got, you know, this Nazi, and it just got him, well, who the heck are these? He started reading and so on. Then he started getting into the history. It goes into the Soviet Union and communism. And then all of a sudden, you got Brezhnev or Khrushchev or whoever it was at the time was going, oh, yeah, we won't invade Czechoslovakia. No, you guys are, you can do what you want until it started going not communist. They said, you know what? We got some tanks. So here come the tanks. So he goes to protest this in Washington at the Soviet embassy or something like that. I remember him telling the story. And he goes there, and there was Fee passing out bags of books, The Economics in One Lesson by Hazlitt. You know, you had, see who else, you had Hayek. You had von Mises. You had all this economics. They're going, look, this, all of this is a result of a philosophical ideology that, oh, by the way, your labor and your money and your freedom, it all belongs to the state. So this was all part. It was a growing philosophy of this Austrian economic understanding where this country was going. Ayn Rand did it too. She came from Russia. She goes, look, I see where this is going. I mean, it's on a train track heading that way. Well, Harry was like, no, he wanted to support the U.S. government versus these other governments. It was the government versus red team versus blue team. It was a government that was his was okay. That's the problem he had because we didn't trust any government.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Fall. You know, you just got time to say your prayers. You know, here we go. Now, this is, you know, I wanted to tell the story of Harry Everingham and the Breakfast Club and the link and overlap with libertarians. It goes back to the 50s. A lot of people, you know, even the people in the Breakfast Club don't know this. Back in the 50s and early 60s, there were, you know, in addition to the Freedom School operation, they had what was called Rampart College. This was an effort, and it's unaccredited. Unaccredited by who? Unaccredited by the government. That was for damn Skippy. So these, they would get, master's degrees and PhDs and so on. They were taught by, you know, really cool thinkers. And the purpose of the college was to educate the students in the, quote, in the art of thinking rather than memorizing. Their conclusions will be reached through logical reasoning and not through the parroting of opinions expressed by others. Now, this is radical thinking. I mean, this is, oh, heck no. You got to get in with the crowd, man. Woo, this Bernays thing. You got to be part of the herd. You can't be out there being your own individual kind of deal going on. And it's like, oh, heck no. So what happened was they had the far right then kind of – they see right as right. I mean, on the right. But together with the Freedom School and the Rampart College House of a Library, there was a 11,000 books, which they, you know, wanted to expand 100,000 when they completed the expansion. And they had a lot of money. You know, millions of dollars was being donated. A lot of people, they go, where's all this money come from outside of, you know, traditional, even the Libertarian Party stuff? The Libertarian movement has always been enormous, much larger. You know, and you had, you know, the Foundation for Economic Education was really the beginnings of a lot of this stuff. You know, so you'd have, you know, stuff on like Lysander Spooner. You know, a lot of people don't even know who he is. You know, you have books like There Is Anarchy and This Bread Is Mine, both by the school's dean, Robert Lefebvre. You know, this is, you know, Ludwig von Mises would have books. Henry Hazlitt, Murray Rothbard. You know, these are the guys that created this movement that later would become this libertarian thing. And it was already started back then. The problem Harry had with it, he and I had long conversations about this, is that this school, this movement, this libertarian, this logic and reason thing took people away from blind support of the very United States government that he spent decades in support of against the evil hordes of whatever, without paying attention to the fact that his own government was becoming them. And it became neon obvious. After we had this conversation, after he and I, you know, had this understanding, it was 1996 when Bob Dole got the Republican nomination in the Breakfast Club. You know, they were all supportive of it because he was a Republican. And that's why I go, I love you guys, but I can't be part of this craziness. That just, heck no, that's just not going to happen. So I would, you know, separate myself, got off the board, and, you know, I was still friends with him. I'd come a lot often. I still spoke and so on. I'd debate other, you know, Republican congressmen to their amusement. I, you know, it was fine. And then as time went on, because it was such a good tradition, and we went to a monthly meetings year-round, first Saturday of the month. And that was kind of the history. There's a lot more to it. Let's go ahead and go to David in California. Go ahead, David. Got you there, David.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, good deal. Yeah, as I was listening to you, it reminded me of sort of the history of the various enemies of America. So, say, for example, you go to 1776. Well, the British tried to re-attack us by 1812. The creation of the Bank of the United States was somewhat of an early Federal Reserve. And the idea that we started borrowing money from England shortly after the American Revolution.
No, it was right after the creation of the Constitution. That's why they did it.
Sure, yeah. And so the various attempts to recapture the United States, if you're familiar with the Civil War, the British attempted to finance the Confederacy, and when Lincoln figured it out, they had to back down and the Union was saved, so to speak, because basically it was just an attempt to split apart America so that the British could reinvade. But the idea that World War One was a protection of the monarchists, that the various monarchies of the world were being protected by the United States, who were inviolably opposed to monarchy, but we essentially got involved in a monarchist war. And then you look at the rise of Hitler. Now, in some ways, Hitler was the equivalent of a monarchist because he was talking about this master race. And the very idea of a monarchy is that you've got these so-called aristocrats who are essentially chosen by God to run everybody's lives, where the idea of America was the idea that the average person could run their own lives, thank you, and you didn't need any so-called con artists or you know, people who are claimed to be chosen by God with no proof. And the idea that the current situation, to me, it's somewhat a car that's been left out of control, or some sort of great machine that's been left out of control. And for many decades, it's kind of tough to figure out who's really in charge of all of the attempts to destroy America, whether it's just like been left in the hands of accountants and lawyers who just follow orders blindly from, in some ways, the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral commissions and all of these so-called, secret powers, many of them are in competition with each other, but they take bad advice from people who have old investments. So, for example, the nuclear industry. Decades ago, the nuclear industry was financed by, many of these same people. It was stupid technology, but they were flattered into thinking it was the way of the future. Now that they know that it's bad technology, they're still invested in it. They don't want to lose their investments, and so they just put it in the hands of bean counters and lawyers and, to some degrees, organized crime. And they just allow these bad investments to take precedence over the will of the people.
Well, so, this is I want to address one thing, whether it's bad technology or not. I mean, get out the math and we'll figure it out one day. But I that's why you leave it up to the free market. I mean, I know it's bad right off the bat when they got to subsidize it or limit liability it or do get the government involved in it. If you're not willing to put your money in it, unless you got the government controlling the market, you got other issues to deal with. That's kind of the base point of a lot of this stuff. And what I'll give you a little bit of the background here. You can see Robert Lefebvre, he ran for Congress as a Republican back in 1950, and he wasn't successful, but he went to work for an anti-union organization called the Wage Earners Committee or something. So that put him in line, gave him some notoriety up there against a communist, whatever. And he was sued by two movie producers, Stanley Kramer and Dor Shari, that felt they got picked on by him saying that their films were pro-communist, which they probably were. But, they came after him. Well, then a few years later after that, he went to work for the right wing in a big way. What they considered to be the right wing, National Economic Council and all that kind of stuff, and director of the Congress of Freedom and director of Day Committee and all this kind of stuff. Well, there was a big purpose that they had, was to diminish the importance of the observation of October 23rd as United Nations Day. This is a keep trying to bring that up all the time, and he was an advisor to Harry Everingham's We the People. Now, this is where the link, started with Lefebvre and Everingham. What they did, it made headlines in 54 at and a lot of stuff going on, but the bottom line was this. They led an attack against a Girl Scout handbook having so many references to the United Nations. And it became a big deal, and that's where they kind of the overlap, came. But there were two paths that was taken. One was what you're talking about. We have this royalty, this government, this entity, this thing that you got to be on somebody's team. What team are you? Where are you a citizen? What flag do you fly? That kind of mentality. And then the other side was, can I choose no flag or my flag? I thought that's what America was about. I get to have my own flag, for
every
me.
Every man a king. Yeah,
yeah. I vote that one, So they go, oh, no. You got to do the communist over here or the fascist over there or the whatever is that we created here. You got to be on the team. So this argument, that's where the split was. And a lot of people think, and the reason I wanted to do this show and talk about this a little bit, is because a lot of people think that this is a new argument. They think that it is, these damn libertarians are rising up and doing their and Ron Paul thing. They go, heck no. These people that we're talking about, Ron knew back when he was young. These are the people that had influence on. These are the books that he read. This was the thing that made him what he is now, is this mentality, this observation, this philosophy that's been going on since for freaking ever. And it comes down to, very simply, what's the proper role of government? Well, certainly, as recognized by the Declaration of Independence, is to support the rights of the individual, do whatever the heck they want, as long as they're not bothering anybody. End of story. That's it. Done. Freedom is, you know, just that. It's free. Go. Have a nice day. You don't need me for you to be free. The only thing you need to govern is to punish those that violate someone else's freedom or defend against foreign aggressors that would infringe on your freedom. So this, we've gotten so far outside of this box that I could see how it happened as a young man dealing with these people that were the captains of the freedom movement, these people that knew all these people, that brought in this stuff, that were aware that there was a problem, that they talked about the Bilderberger and the Trilateral and the Council on Foreign Relations, and they had charts, and they had speakers, and they had guys come in. I remember one thing in the mid-90s was, you guys want to know where Mikhail Gorbachev went? You know, you guys wonder where he, you know where he is?
He's at the he's just up the few miles from me. Yeah,
yeah. He was at the Presidio. You know, he started the Green Cross, which is now in the UN, and they're gonna. You know, there's all this carbon tax stuff and Kyoto Treaty of what a blah blah blah. The communist mentality is going to use environmentalism. That's why they call them watermelons. Green on the outside, red on the inside.
Yeah, I am a green, by the way, and we've always been fighting this idea that that there is an economic way to deal with pollution. Basically,
People responsible for the messes they make and stop giving them limited liability and stop subsidizing one energy over another. Just stop.
Well, right. I mean, basically, your phrase there, the limited liability, that's not constitutional. There's no equal justice under the law says that if somebody does you a certain amount of damage, there is nobody that can limit that amount of damage by law. That equal justice under the law says that if they... you take all their assets until they if they do you unlimited damages, then you have the ability to take every bit of their assets.
Well, that's what's going on with BP right now. You watch, BP may declare bankruptcy.
Well, I know, and it's all based on fraudulent numbers. And see, that's basically where the Green Party looks at some of these environmental catastrophes. Basically, there may not be enough money on the planet to deal with something like acid rain, or there may not be enough money to deal with this specific gusher that never seems to stop. The dollar value of the damages may total more than all of the money in the world. So it's more important to look at science and the laws of physics than it is to look at the money and the bean counters that are coming out of the various corporations and accounting firms. And since many of those bean counters, say, for example, you were just talking about Ron Paul. It's, you know, maybe about 100 years ago, there were a lot of these Texas cattlemen that were marrying into the British families. You know, the British were essentially broke. If you look a couple of hundred years ago, many of those princes and princesses and whatnot were on tight leashes. They were spendthrifts. They were idiots. They were inbred. They didn't have a lick of sense, but you had some Texas cattlemen that said, wow, I'd love to be, have my daughter become a princess. So to me, Texas has always been a strange state because many of the political figures in Texas were beholden to the same cattlemen that had some aristocratic notions. And so there's always been this strange Texas politics that's been damaging the psyche of freedom in America, and I've always been a little suspicious of how Texas can dominate the world of politics, especially when you look at this textbook industry, the very idea that they can use market forces to all of a sudden take people out of Thomas Jefferson out of history and to destroy our very education system through a series of sabotages.
Now so think about it. I want to ask you this question. You bring up something that I want to dwell on a little bit. The point that I'm making in all of this is that it's a cultural war. That this it's for the hearts and minds of, and they will stop at nothing and use any and everything, including all our money and money we don't even have to do it. So. From your perspective, I mean, from a libertarian perspective, and you're what, environmental green, you're saying?
Well, I try to be more scientific than I.
Okay, well, you're more left.
Financial management training and economics training. But
okay, so are you libertarian? Would you call yourself libertarian?
No. Not
okay,
really,
so we're two different things. Let's see where we can agree on this.
Yeah, do you want to do an ad here? I can hold.
Yeah, go ahead and hold on. We'll do it. Yeah, my thing, what I want to get to is that, can we agree on that they're trying to manipulate us into something? What is it that they're going to manipulate us into? And would you do the same thing if you had the power? Or would you say, stop the government schools altogether? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Oh, it matters not. He is your king. You know, this is what we come to grips with. So if the king sends you to the king's schools, and the king teachers and the king certified schools of, and the king ripped you off of your money to send all the children in the realm to the king schools, do you want to have some influence on the king schools, or do you want to just do away with the king schools? And I asked David in California, what's your thought, man?
Well, you're laying it out pretty well, because basically, if you look at the 1776, the 13 colonies, they're actually more than that because it included Canada and, down in the Bahamas and whatnot. But some of the crimes of those colonies were so egregious. They were essentially sending men out to their deaths. The various colonies were creating their own money and forcing us to dance to the fake numbers that the various the Hudson Bay Colony was notorious for, just causing hundreds and thousands of people to die, and they'd create fake script and sell your soul to the company store. And this was long before the same problem was going on in the South, well over 100 years earlier.
Does this have something to do with the schools?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you better get to it. You only got about a minute.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, just basically, to me, the libertarians have been essentially, there is no easy definable definition of libertarian. And
yeah, I got one.
euphemisms for freedom. And so these
I got a clear definition. You want to hear it? Thou shalt leave me alone. That's it. Next.
Well, yeah, but united you stand, divided you fall. Nobody's got the right to poison all of us. And so, it's the guy downstream from the guy that's polluting that is looking for protection.
Sounds like he's not leaving me alone.
You mean that the guy that pollutes has got the right to be left alone from
the
people that
he poisons? No, it sounds like he's not leaving me alone if he's poisoning me.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah,
so the absolutely. Only role of government from a libertarian perspective, if you're going to have one, is to make me whole, to defend my rights. Is he violating my life, liberty, my property? Well, guilty. Next.
Yeah, and that's why we want to have honest district attorneys and honest U.S. district attorneys and honest attorney generals.
You missed my original question. Do you advocate for controlling what is taught to children in the government schools, or do you advocate for the elimination of government schools?
Oh, I don't advocate for the elimination. I just want honest information. I'm like Thomas.
Who gets to decide that?
I'm like Ben Franklin. You take all the information, you put it into a library, and you make free access to it. When these people take our libraries and they censor them and they turn them into an opportunity,
you're
going to
always have somebody censoring and picking and deciding what goes in the public libraries. That's why they used to be philanthropic private ones. They were so popular. That's why they wanted to make them government. They wanted to control what went in there. They wanted to have what was accessible to the children. They wanted to make sure that they got to control what could and could not be taught learned. This is the point. You know, we could go on. And you call back again tomorrow, David. Thanks for the call. And we'll get more into this because this is a good conversation. This is why libertarians, you got an answer for everything. Yeah, we do. It's called freedom. I don't want you to take my money and redistribute it and create anything that would be certainly to determine from a government standpoint what should and should not be in a child's mind. Not your job.